Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
So-called gender-affirming care has inflicted lasting physical and psychological damage on vulnerable young people. This is not medicine, it is malpractice. We're done with junk science driven by ideological pursuits, not the well-being of children.
The Trump administration's announced sweeping new measures that could effectively cut off gender-affirming care for transgender youth across the country. We'll speak to ACLU attorney Chase Strangio and a New York doctor who works with trans youth. Then to the case of Kilmer Abrego Garcia, the Maryland father wrongfully deported to El Salvador earlier this year. Last week, he reunited with his family after months in ICE detention, but his ordeal is not over.
No importa lo que este gobierno diga.
No matter what this government says, in the end, I still believe this is a country of laws, a country of justice, and we will put an end to all this injustice.
Plus, we look at the Trump administration's plan to ramp up efforts to strip the citizenship of hundreds of naturalized Americans. And we'll get response to the Trump administration's move to suspend the diversity visa lottery program, the green card program, in the wake of the Brown University and MIT shootings. The suspect in both cases has been found dead. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Pentagon says it killed five people in a pair of airstrikes on boats in the eastern Pacific, claiming they were carrying drugs, though, again, providing no evidence. The latest attacks bring the Pentagon's claimed death toll in similar attacks to over 100 since September. This comes as leaders of the United Nations and Latin American nations are calling on the Trump administration to halt the extrajudicial killings and to end its threats of a regime change war against Venezuela. This is the Mexican president, Claudia Sheinbaum, speaking Wednesday.
Reiteramos la posición de México.
We reiterate Mexico's position according to our Constitution of non-intervention. No foreign interference, self-determination of peoples, and peaceful resolution of controversies. We call for dialogue and peace to resolve any international controversy, not intervention.
The suspect in the Brown University mass shooting was found dead of a self-inflicted gunshot wound Thursday night in a Salem, New Hampshire storage unit he'd rented. The suspect was identified as Claudio Neves Valente, a 48-year-old Portuguese national who attended Brown University in 2000-2001. He was reportedly enrolled as a graduate student from the fall of 2000 to the next spring. Brown president Christina Paxson said in a statement, quote, during his time at Brown, Neves Valente was enrolled only in physics classes, and it's likely he would have taken courses and spent time in Barras and Holly, referring to the building where the shooting took place. Authorities said they believe Neves Valente is also responsible for the murder of the award-winning MIT physics professor Nuno Lodero at his home in Brookline, Massachusetts, just 48 hours after the Brown shooting that killed two students and wounded nine others. Neves Valente was reportedly a teaching assistant in the same university in Portugal Lodero attended between 1995 and 2000. Investigators say tips from a Brown campus custodian helped to narrow down the days-long search for the suspect. Neves was reportedly spotted at Brown's Battison Halle building in the days before the shooting, including at least twice by the custodian, who said he'd seen a person wearing a surgical mask and whose clothing matched the individual seen in surveillance footage released by police. In the wake of the killings, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem announced the Trump administration is suspending its diversity visa lottery program. Neves Valente entered the country on a student visa in 2000 and was granted a green card through the visa program in 2017. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. In Gaza, Israeli airstrikes on a town east of Khan Yunis have killed four Palestinian civilians, including a woman, over the past 24 hours. This follows air and artillery strikes in the cities of Rafah and Khan Yunis, the latest in a series of near-daily ceasefire violations by Israel's military. Separately, a child in the Nusayrat refugee camp died after triggering unexploded Israeli ordnance. And Doctors Without Borders said Thursday a 29-day-old baby died of hypothermia at Nasser Hospital, the latest Palestinian to freeze to death as Israel prevents aid convoys from bringing tents and other portable shelters into Gaza. Nursing team supervisor Bilal Abu Saada said, quote, "Children are losing their lives because they lack the most basic items for survival. Babies are arriving to the hospital cold with near-death vital signs. Even our best efforts are not enough. They say the war has ended, but people are still having to fight for their lives," unquote. The Trump administration's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, is hosting talks in Miami today with senior officials from Qatar, Egypt and Turkey, focused on the next phase of the Gaza ceasefire agreement, which Gaza officials say Israel's violated more than 800 times since it took effect on October 10th. The meeting comes after the Middle East Eye reported the U.S., Israel and UAE have discussed using profits from Gaza's undeveloped offshore natural gas supplies to help pay for the reconstruction of the territory. Meanwhile, the Trump administration's announced a new round of sanctions on staff members at the ICC. That's the International Criminal Court in The Hague, citing the court's ongoing probe into Israeli war crimes. In Britain, advocates are calling on the immediate release of six political prisoners awaiting trial for supporting the banned protest group Palestine Action. More than 800 doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals have warned the activists are at risk of dying as they have not received proper medical attention, some after over 40 days on hunger strike, protesting their treatment in prison and calling for their release on bail. This is the sister of Palestine Action prisoner 28-year-old Kamran Ahmed.
He is on day 39 of his hunger strike. He's had two hospitalizations since the start of his hunger strike, having only come out of his hospitalization last week. Whilst they were able to stabilize his ketones, they are steeply on the rise again. But what is mostly concerning is that his heart is giving in and his pulse is slowing down. And at the moment, he's losing half a kg every day.
In the United States, House Democrats have released more photos from the estate of the convicted serial sex offender Jeffrey Epstein ahead of today's congressionally mandated deadline for the Justice Department to release the Epstein files. The uncaptioned photos show Epstein with film director Woody Allen, Trump's former advisor Steve Bannon, New York Times opinion columnist David Brooks, MIT linguist Noam Chomsky, and billionaire tech mogul Bill Gates. Some of the photographs show what appear to be lines from Vladimir Nabokov's Lolita, a novel about a pedophile written on parts of a woman's body. Ahead of today's deadline, CNN reported the Justice Department was racing to redact thousands of pages in the Epstein files. Here in New York, Gothamist is reporting federal immigration officers were able to enter private areas of city shelters or obtain resident information without presenting judicial warrants at least five times earlier this year. That's despite sanctuary city laws barring city staffers from allowing immigration officers to enter private areas of city property. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch is calling on Congress to investigate the brutality of the Trump administration's immigration enforcement activities, writing, quote, allowing masked unidentified agents to roam communities and apprehend people without identifying themselves erodes trust in the rule of law and creates a dangerous vacuum where abuses can flourish, exacerbating the unnecessary violence and brutality of the arrests, unquote. In Wisconsin, a jury Thursday convicted Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan of obstructing federal agents from arresting an undocumented immigrant while jurors acquitted her of a misdemeanor charge. She was accused of helping an undocumented immigrant leave her courtroom in April to avoid arrest by agents waiting in the hallway. The Trump administration's announced new policies aimed at denying gender-affirming care to transgender youth. The proposed new rules would cut off all Medicare and Medicaid funding to hospitals offering such care to anyone under 18. Medicare and Medicaid cover nearly half of all hospital spending. After headlines, we'll speak with Chase Strangio of the ACLU and a pediatrician and adolescent medicine specialist who works with transgender youth in New York City. President Trump signed an executive order Thursday fast-tracking the reclassification of cannabis as a Schedule 3 substance, which would pave the way for the Food and Drug Administration to study its medicinal uses. It's currently listed under the U.S. Controlled Substances Act as a Schedule 1 substance, a list that includes heroin, ecstasy, and peyote. During Thursday's signing ceremony, Trump struggled to stay awake. It's the latest in a series of recent public events where Trump appeared to fall asleep in front of the cameras. That's fueled speculation about his health. California Congress member Sidney Kamlager Dove wrote on social media, quote, the Alzheimer's drug Leqembi is administered through an infusion, for example, through the hand, can cause swelling, bleeding, or fluid leakage in the brain, requiring regular MRIs, can cause tiredness. Curious, she wrote. President Trump's redecorated a stretch of the White House he's calling the Presidential Walk of Fame with plaques offering hyper-partisan descriptions of past presidents and his own time in the as president. The portrait gallery along the West Wing colonnade now features Trump's words cast in bronze in the style of a social media post. One plaque under President Biden, which is actually a picture of an auto pen, reads, quote, Sleepy Joe Biden was by far the worst president in American history, unquote, and claims the 2020 election was the most corrupt in U.S. history. Another reads, quote, under Barack Obama's portrait, Barack Hussein Obama was the first black president, a community organizer, one-term senator from Illinois, and one of the most divisive political figures in American history, unquote. The plaques also tout Trump's achievements, claiming he tackled inflation and ended eight wars, while President Ronald Reagan's plaque reads, quote, he was a fan of President Donald J. Trump before Trump's historic run for the White House. Likewise, President Trump was a fan of his exclamation point, unquote. This week, President Trump said the cost of his planned ballroom project at the White House could reach $400 million. That's double his earlier claim that it would cost $200 million. On Monday, his administration argued the ballroom's construction is a matter of national security. The Board of Trustees at the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts voted Thursday to rename the facility. Its new name will be the Donald J. Trump and the John F. Kennedy Memorial Center for the Performing Arts. The board members were handpicked by President Trump in February after he named himself chair. Democratic lawmakers called the move illegal, saying in a statement that any name change would require an act of Congress. The media company run by Donald Trump Jr. and former Republican Congress member Devin Nunes has announced a $6 billion merger with a firm that hopes to build the world's first viable nuclear fusion power plant. The merger between the Trump Media and Technology Group and TAE Technologies comes after President Trump signed executive order seeking to bar states from regulating artificial intelligence and the energy-intensive data centers needed to power AI. This comes as Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders is continuing to speak out against AI data centers amidst a construction boom that's led to protests over skyrocketing electricity costs and strains on communities' water supplies.
I will be pushing for a moratorium on the construction of data centers that are powering this unregulated sprint to develop and deploy AI. This moratorium will give democracy a chance to catch up with the transformative changes that we are witnessing and make sure that the benefits of these technologies work for all of us, not just the wealthiest people on Earth.
And protests have erupted across Bangladesh after the death of prominent youth activist Sharif Osman Hadi, a leader in last year's uprising that ousted the Bangladeshi Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina. Police and paramilitary forces have been deployed to the capital Dhaka and other cities as hundreds of people took to the streets overnight Thursday. Last week, Hadi, an outspoken critic of India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi, was shot in the head by masked assailants as he launched his campaign for the first elections since the 2024 ouster of Sheikh Hasina, who remains in self-imposed exile in India, was sentenced to death for crimes against humanity last month. Sharif Osman Hadi died of his wounds Thursday at a hospital in Singapore. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Trump administration's announced new measures that could effectively ban gender-affirming care for transgender youth. On Thursday, Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Dr. Mehmet Oz, who leads Medicaid and Medicare, unveiled a series of new rules targeting hospitals and doctors that provide care to trans youth. One rule would strip Medicaid and Medicare funding for any hospital that provides pediatric gender-affirming care. Kennedy spoke Thursday.
So-called gender-affirming care has inflicted lasting physical and psychological damage on vulnerable young people. This is not medicine. It is malpractice. We're done with junk science driven by ideological pursuits, not the well-being of children.
The Dr. Susan Kressley, president of the American Academy of Pediatrics, criticized the new rules, saying, quote, allowing the government to determine which patient groups deserve care sets a dangerous precedent, and children and families will bear the consequences, unquote. The new rules were announced a day after the House narrowly approved a bill that aims to criminalize providing gender-affirming medical care for any transgender person under the age of 18 and subject providers to hefty fines and up to 10 years in prison. This is Democratic Representative Sarah McBride, the first openly transgender member of Congress, speaking to reporters before the anti-trans bill vote Wednesday.
We are two legislative days away from the Affordable Care Act tax credits expiring, when millions of people will see their healthcare premiums skyrocket. And GOP leadership, with that deadline fast approaching, has decided to schedule two votes on anti-trans bills and precisely zero votes on extending the Affordable Care Act tax credits. They would rather have us focus in and debate a misunderstood and vulnerable 1% of the population instead of focusing in on the fact that they are raiding everyone's health care in order to pay for tax breaks for the wealthiest 1%. All Republican politicians care about is making the rich richer and attacking trans people. They are obsessed with trans people. I actually think they think more about trans people than trans people think about trans people. They are consumed with this, and they are extreme on it. They are bringing forward a bill that would put parents and providers at risk of being jailed, literally jailed, for affirming their transgender child and following medical best practices.
We're joined now by two guests. Jeffrey Birnbaum is a pediatrician, adolescent medicine specialist who works with transgender youth here in New York City. And we're joined by Chase Strangio, the co-director of the American Civil Liberties Union's LGBTQ and HIV Project. Last year, he became the first openly trans lawyer to argue in front of the Supreme Court when he presented oral arguments in United States versus Scrimeti. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Chase, let's begin with you. If you can explain what RFK Jr., the health secretary, has announced and what the House passed.
Yeah, so I mean, I just want to take a step back and echo what Representative McBride said, because before we get into the details, we have to understand what's happening here, which is that healthcare costs for Americans are about to skyrocket, and you have two branches of government, the legislative and the executive, deciding to instead focus on usurping the decisions of parents and doctors to try to, in the case of the House bill, criminalize this care. And in the case of the actions from HHS, coerce hospitals into stopping providing care for transgender adolescents. This is a drastic departure from any concern about science, concern about parents and their rights. And frankly, it's really rich to hear the Secretary RFK Jr. talking about junk science when what we have here is medical care supported by every major medical association in the United States. Meanwhile, this is an administration that is so anti-science that I think we can see that all of our health is under threat. And trans people now and our families are facing terror from this administration because they are, in essence, saying, we will do whatever it takes to take away your health care. And that's what we're seeing right now.
So we're talking about removing Medicare and Medicaid from hospitals where transgender care is performed on young people, and doctors being criminalized. If they dare to engage in transgender care, they could go to prison?
Exactly. So with respect to the bill that passed the House, that is threatening doctors with 10 years in prison. This would be a felony for following evidence-based medicine. And then on the HHS side, it is a proposed rule. And I think it's important so that people aren't terrified right now. Neither of these things is the law yet. But what we have from HHS is a proposed rule, in essence, saying to hospitals across the country, including in states where this care is legal, we will take away the vast majority of your funding if you continue to provide this care to transgender adolescents, regardless of whether federal money is being used to provide the care. So it's telling hospitals that they have to stop providing the care if they are, in essence, going to continue to operate.
Hmm. Have hospitals responded?
What we're seeing from hospitals since January of this year, since inauguration, is that they are in some cases, capitulating to the threats of the administration, and in some cases, continuing to take a stand to defend their patients. Obviously, right now, this is a significant escalation. And if these regulations are, in fact, finalized in the way that they have been proposed, hospitals will not really have a choice because they cannot afford to lose 50% or more of their operating money. So it is putting hospitals in an impossible situation, and just another example of this administration undermining and threatening all of our health and welfare.
I want to go back to the Democratic Congress member, Sarah McBride. She is the first openly transgender member of Congress.
I get it's hard to understand what it feels like to be trans. I get that it is hard to understand what it feels like to be me. I get that it's hard to understand this care and understand the need for it. But one of the things that gets so lost in this conversation is that the transgender adults of today were kids once. I was a kid once. I didn't have the courage to come out until I was 21. But it's a fact I have known about myself for my entire life. I didn't have the courage to come out until I was 21, and that means 21 years of pain. 21 years of unwavering homesickness that only went away when I was able to get the care that I needed. And my biggest regret in life is that I never had a childhood without that pain.
That's Sarah McBride, the first openly trans member of Congress. Dr. Jeffrey Birnbaum, you're a pediatrician and adolescent medicine specialist who works with transgender youth in New York City. If you can expand on what Congressmember McBride is saying and talk about what this means for you. Do you continue your care? You could face 10 years in prison.
Yeah, well, Congresswoman McBride's words really resonated with me. As soon as this show is over this morning, I'm going to spend the morning in my clinic working with these young people that of the type that she talks about. Not just her, but everyone who has that sort of experience as young people. I work with these young people and their parents, their families, every single day, and they are terrified right now. I have to tell you the number of suicide attempts we've averted, the amount of depression we've treated, the number of kids that we've kept in school, keeping their school performance up, helping them reach their life goals. This is what transgender treatment for young people results in, improved outcomes. If these laws go forward, I don't know how my facility is going to respond, but I refuse to stop providing this care, knowing that I could potentially face 10 years in prison and a felony charge. I'm willing to go down that route if necessary.
Can you compare suicide rates of children who are trans and children who are not?
I don't have the exact information in front of me in terms of rates, but LGBT youth in general have higher suicide rates than non-LGBT youth overall. That's inclusive of all LGBT youth, and transgender youth probably at much higher rates because they are that much more marginalized. I would say the one thing that is best in prevention of these horrible outcomes is access to care and a supportive family.
What does it mean to interrupt transgender care, Dr. Birnbaum?
Complete devastation for these families. I mean, they won't know where to go. They won't have recourse. People are already asking me questions about stockpiling hormones, getting them overseas through the internet. Sometimes people are talking about buying things that they don't even know what it is that they're buying because there's no quality control. This is just devastating. And young people and their parents are terrified. I can't tell you when the executive order first came out back at the end of January, the number of families that came to me seeking care because I refused to stop providing care when other facilities immediately bent at the knee to the executive order and shut down their youth clinics. It's just giving people a place where they can go and safe refuge. That alone helps improve the outcomes. But I don't know what's going to happen to them in the long run if someone like me is completely stopped from providing this type of care.
Dr. Mehmet Oz said, we want our hospitals returning to healing, not harming the patients entrusted in their care, or they're going to pay a very high price. Explain what gender-affirming care is, the range of that care.
In this age group, we start with counseling. Young people need to have an understanding of who they are and try and solidify their identity to determine what medical interventions may be appropriate. Right at the onset of puberty, ideally would be the time to introduce puberty blockade through drugs like Leprelin and Triptorelin. Those are commonly prescribed drugs. Histrelin is an implant, and that is 100% reversible. When they start talking about irreversible damage, puberty blockade is 100% reversible and safe. We've been using it for decades. We've been treating precocious puberty with it for decades. We have lots of experience. And so, you know, I don't put much stock in what they're saying about that. When young people want to start gender transitioning, sometimes I may start at age 16, which is a common age to start, but I would be willing to start younger with the consent of the parents and having lots of discussion, starting on either testosterone or estradiol treatment. That allows their body to change with their gender that they identify with. And mind you, it's not only in gender-affirming care that we use those drugs. We use those drugs in delayed puberty as well, other diseases like congenital.